untouchable. Seriously, we dare you to try and touch him. Bob McCowan at Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number three of the longest day of the year. It's Monday, March the 2nd, 2014.
Imagine being a viewer or a listener. You've only been here since 4 o'clock.
Yeah, and I didn't pay any attention to the first 8 hours of this mess. What time were you in this morning?
Six.
Said catering, though, right?
There's a little food.
There's a lot of food.
A lot of food or a little food?
A little food, not a lot. They ran out of coffee at 6:15, Bob.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Is that a CBC thing or a Sportsnet thing?
Sportsnet is in charge of its own life, and the building is the building.
We are merely tenants.
But we are merely a tenant. Yeah, that's right.
Mark Bergevin joins us of the Montreal Canadiens. Mr. Bergevin, first of all, Dale Talon says hello.
Oh, excited, Dale, my friend Dale.
we just had him on. He didn't do a damn thing today. He was resting. Says
I know. He's playing golf, probably.
He said he was played 9 holes of golf today. You didn't play 9 holes today. Wow, pretty hard, huh? You actually had.
I didn't play golf today. No,
well, they're in San Jose. I don't know, Mark. There's nice golf courses in San Jose.
Yeah.
Well, I looked outside. I saw that green stuff. I asked the guys, "What is that green stuff?" They say it's grass. We don't have that in Montreal. white snow.
Yeah. Are you? I assume you're satisfied with what happened today, or would you have liked to have done significantly more?
No, we're happy with what we've done. We always try to make our team better. That's part of our job. There's always stuff you like to do you're not able to do. But overall, we're very pleased with our day, yes.
What does Jeff Petrie do for you that, say, Tom Gilbert doesn't?
Well, I don't say that. I think he just adds to our group. I said Tommy's been very good for our team, especially lately. Since Emmy's been out, I think he raised his game to another level. So we're really pleased with Tommy. But also, we bring Jeff, we bring another moving defenseman who could skate and kill penalties and maybe chip in the power play the odd time. So we just add to our depth, to our group. And I always I believe that you have enough defensemen going into the playoffs.
Did that Petrie deal come together today, Mark, or has that been in progress for a while?
Well, the plan is to be he's coming here today, and you know, with fights and everything. So hopefully he's here on time for a game.
Was this a deal that you have been working on for a considerable period of time?
Yeah, we talked about this for quite a bit. You know, there's deals, it takes longer to come, but this one's been, yeah, I would say yes. We made inquiries about Jeff a long time ago, and Mac, you know, was very fair and very good in communicating with us. I think we had everything was done with a lot of professionalism from the Oilers' side.
You spoke of depth, obviously, on the blue line, but you went and got some other depth pieces as well. Torrey Mitchell, by the way, Torrey Mitchell coming home, that's got to be a thrill for him. He's a Montreal kid. What will Torrey Mitchell do for your team?
Well, brings speed. He brings a player that could play, you know, he's a right-hand shot, could play both on the wing and in a center position. Again, good skater, plays our type of game where we use speed, so he fits the mold for that.
Well, we congratulate you on your acquisitions. I wish you the best of luck. This is a pretty good hockey team. I'm sure you think it just got a little bit better, and I suspect it probably did. Good luck the rest of the way and on into the playoffs, and thanks for taking a couple minutes for us today. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, guys. Thanks for having me.
Mark Bergevin, the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. Are they a better hockey team today with Petrie?
Yeah, you're a skeptic on this one, aren't you?
I don't think so, but you know, that's what these guys do for a living. I talk about them on television, and I have done a ton of Oiler games the last 2 or 3 years, and I just think Jeff Petrie's soft. I don't know what he can do. Another puck carrying defenseman, PK and Andre Markov do a magnificent job of it. I know they need some other guys to do it, but the Achilles heel for the Canadians, in my mind, are those 4-5 and 6 defensemen. And I'm not sure they filled it with Petrie in this situation. I'm just not.
Was there somebody else that was out there that you would have thought would have been a better fit?
Yeah, Roman Polak, for me, would have been a much tougher, harder-nosed fit. But and I don't have this confirmed from anybody in the Montreal organization because they're very secretive. But Roman Polak had a horrible game Saturday night at the Bell Center playing for the Leafs. And I would think that that might have just scared them off so much. He was just horrendous with losing 4-0. But Polak, to me, I think he's a heavy-duty, hard-nosed, clear-the-guy-in-front-of-the-net guy that could he could help a team in that 5-6 position.
You suspect they were interested?
I think they were at a point. I think that St. Louis was interested in Polak. I think that Montreal was interested in Polak, but the Leafs wanted too much.
So this was this a function, this deal that didn't happen for Polak?
Well, I know, but I think that, you know, I'll tell you what, Mark Bergevin and, you know, the Sean Gordon article in the Globe and Mail is an outstanding piece on what this guy is like and what he does. He doesn't sit there and dictate. He has a bunch of people that he works with. He creates consensus. You know, there's a very strong senior management group in Montreal, and Scott Mellenby and Larry Carrier.
And he's held them together, right? He's kept his guys there, which is interesting.
Absolutely. Marty Lapointe's part of it. Yeah. Absolutely. And so if you say, well, we can't get Polak at the price, give us the other guys. And I'm sure Petrie would be on that list at some point. And that's what you do. You at the end of the day, you find the best deal that fits with what you're prepared to give up. And the Canadians, obviously, at a certain point, either weren't prepared to give up what the Leafs wanted or soured on Polak for what
or maybe a bit of both.
Or maybe a bit of both. Who knows?
Well, we may never know the answer to that question. We will address this as if there are people just joining us now for the first time, and I've asked previously, did anybody do anything that you think will be fundamentally impactful here?
I think Anaheim did a really good job. I think that Anaheim added two defensemen, Simon Dupre and James Wisniewski from Columbus, Dupre from Pittsburgh, Wisniewski from Columbus. They needed to address an issue on the blue line. I think they did. You combine that with the trade they made earlier in the week with Marc Bergevin for Yuri Sikach, who I think will, in the end, be a very good mix with Perry and Getzlaff. I think that the four trades today that Bob Murray made, five overall, I think the Anaheim Ducks have put themselves in a very, very good position. I think your pal Boudreaux will be very, very happy.
Does Holzer play for them?
Oh, yeah. Once they clear him of his concussion, Holzer will play. Again, what Bergevin said, you can't have too many defensemen going to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a war of attrition, particularly that first round in the Western Conference. You know, Anaheim, L.A. in the first round? Not out of the question. You know, that will be a war. You know, how do you come out of it? I mean, that's something that these guys are, you know, that's the arms race, trying to get ready. Have eight good defensemen ready for the playoffs. And only six play, two sit.
Do you think anybody else did anything worth talking about?
I'm not today, not particularly. No, I'd like I'm totally intrigued by the Yager to Florida thing, though. I think I do like that. I just like the idea of him being there, and it's an intro. That whole story of that team right now interests me.
Yeah.
So having him walk into that room and you know he's the slow motion version of him is still capable of doing magical things on occasion.
The general manager of the Calgary Flames, Brad Treliving, joins us. Mr. Treliving, how are you?
I'm doing okay today. How are you doing today, Bob?
We're doing great. I know it's a long day. We appreciate very much taking a couple of minutes for us. Well, John, I'll throw it to you because we were talking about Giordano a little bit earlier on and the situation that took place. Ask the question.
Yeah. Hey, Brad, how are you? I've been bugging Brad all day. So.
Yeah, he didn't sound that enthused, John. I don't know, Brad. You got to hide it better than that, Brad.
So can you talk us through the last 5 days since the injury that Mark sustained and the approach that you had? I mean, it was like you guys put us on hold and put the fans on hold. And I don't mean that in any negative sense. You guys put us on hold for 5 days not releasing the torn bicep, because the torn bicep was, you guys knew right away.
Are you insinuating that there was something untruthful done, John?
No, what I'm suggesting is that you were trying to find a way to make sure the other teams didn't know you needed a defenseman.
Well, it's two things. Obviously, number one, it was the concern for Mark. We know he got injured. There was some time after the New Jersey game. I think it was a day or two when just to get the actual medical report of here's exactly what's taken place. And with that goes options. And, the option being, what is the ability or likelihood or inability for Mark to continue to play? I mean, after you get, okay, here's the diagnosis, we're not going to do anything to jeopardize. You wouldn't do it to any player, but obviously knowing Mark's status with us and just our captain, our best player. So you want to get all the information, and that doesn't just happen overnight. You see specialists, you go through the process. As you're going through that, without question, we were quiet, as quiet as we could be. And again, for Mark's situation, and you look at us and trying to figure out how we're going to deal with this. But it was, Mark went back, I think it was yesterday, went back to see our people in Calgary, go through everything once again. And it was, when it was finally determined now that, because with this injury and with some injuries, you see how it responds, you see how it settles down. Is there a remote chance to play? If so, when? We finally got to that here now where it's, there's no ability to play through this injury. So once that's determined, you get it fixed and you deal with it. And there's the injury to deal with. And obviously those people that know Mark know, this is, he'd play on one leg if he could. And so you're also dealing with the person who's it's ripped all of our guts out and it's devastated him. And now we deal with it and we move on as best we can.
Now, he took the pregame skate against the Islanders the other night, though, didn't he, Brett? Like, there was no chance he was going to play in that hockey game, was there? Like, you guys knew that.
Yeah, well, in my mind, there's no chance. But that's Mark. If you know Mark, he's like, if there's a half of 1% chance, let me see. I mean, first of all, you determine there's no further damage that you can do. But then it's a functionality. You can't put somebody in a position where they can't function. And it's a pain tolerance and just it's whether there's the ability to do it. So, when there's a even as remote as it was, Mark wanted to see if there's a chance, and it was pretty obvious pretty quick that there wasn't going to be a chance. And then you look at it and say, with time, whatever that time might be, is there a chance before the end of the season that he could come back? And when you finally make that determination, then you move forward and get it repaired.
With a player, Brad, that is as good as this player has played, it's impossible to go out there at trade deadline time and replace him with something comparable. Did you contemplate any kinds of moves to compensate for his potential loss?
Well, yeah, Bob, we've been looking at this and saying, okay, and I think yours is a real good, and that's our belief right from the beginning is as soon as it happens, you don't replace Mark Giordano.
Right.
You don't go to the Mark Giordano tree and pick one off. And if you think the dangerous part, if you think you might get a close facsimile, to me, you make a massive, huge mistake at this time of the year. Because the price is for us to go out and plug a hole, it didn't make any sense. And but do we look and say yes? We've got a big hole in our blue line, and we want to try to fill it. Yes, we've been working that since the minute Mark went down. We just couldn't find that, a fit where all of a sudden we make a move that may or may not make us better, but or help us or fill the gap.
but yet it's going to cost us something that a week, 2 weeks, a month from now, we're wondering what the heck we just did. So
yeah, you regret it.
You just regret it. So we were aggressive on any possible situation, looked at a bunch of different scenarios, and at the end of the day, we couldn't find anything to make sense. And so that's where we were at.
Brad, your team has been tremendously resilient this year. All those comeback wins would attest to that. Are you worried at all about what this is going to do to your team emotionally?
Well, you're worried all the time, yeah. But yeah, our group is, you're right. It's a real fun group to be around. They're a real resilient group. You know, nothing seems to faze them. Listen, you also have to deal in reality. Like, is this a blow? Yes, it is a blow. You know, we gathered our group. Actually, we had a little meal as a group after the game in New Jersey. And, you know, at that point, we didn't know. We didn't know how long Mark's going to be out. But you could see it. Probably they could see it in my face, too. We all looked like we just were walking out of a funeral. So I think that was it. We shut the doors and had a little meeting and said, listen, you know, absolutely, this is not good. That we, you know, whether Mark misses a day, a week, or whatever it is. So we know what he means. But at the end of the day, too, we got to get our heads up here. Nobody can feel sorry for us. This will cause some adversity, but with each one, there's opportunity. And, you know, I have yet to meet a hockey player that says, I want less chance, less opportunity, less minutes. So now here's a chance for people to step up, to do a little bit more, not just on the blue line, but throughout our lineup. And so we've just taken that approach. So it's not reality to think people are just going to, you know, hug and say, great, you know, Mark, so we'll just soldier on. There is a period, and I think what's been important is we've had a little time here just over the last couple of days to sort of regroup and say, okay, now we know this is the group we got, and you know, the last 18-19 games or whatever it is we have, we are, you know, we're going to push like mad to see if we can't keep this thing moving along.
Shani, turn your mic on, please.
You traded Sven Barchi to Vancouver. How difficult was it to give up on a first-round pick? But as I understand it, he had asked to be traded.
Well, it's, anytime you move a player, and especially a young player, and I, you know, those are difficult decisions. You know, there is some context here when we look at it. You know, Sven's, and I'm relatively new. I just got to know Sven this year. Obviously, followed him throughout his junior career and his first 3 years of pro. You know, it was made clear to me through his representatives that Sven was eager to look for a new opportunity. You know, in recent weeks, it was made clear to me that Sven's coming to the end of his entry-level contract. And it was their intention not to come back to Calgary. And that's by no way, shape, or form I'm not throwing rocks at Sven at all. I mean, that's the reality. That's where they were. But in also those cases, you just don't react and say, he's not the first player to be unhappy in a situation. You do everything you can to work through those, and you try to find solutions. And so this process has been going on for quite a while. You then go into the market and see, okay, if we were to do something, what makes sense? What's the return? And in all candor, guys, this is the best. You know, we talked with Vancouver. This was by far the best return that we had to date. But you also have to study that. Does it get better? Do we think the situation could improve and therefore the value could increase?
Right.
You have to map out all the different solutions. In our mind, we just felt the situation was going to deteriorate. And, you know, you never want to act too soon, but you can also act too slowly. And we just felt, you know, all things considered, this deal made sense for us. It gives us another, what we think is a very good asset and a good draft. And Sven's a good player. Sven's a good young player. But we just felt it was time to make this move.
The Giordano injury doesn't make things any easier, but you're still alive. And where there's hope, there's the prospect of the playoffs. And I think at this point, well, at the beginning of the season, I'm not sure very many Calgary fans thought there was much of a chance of that happening. So you've given them a nice ride. We'll see over the next few weeks whether it can come to fruition. Thanks a lot for taking time for us tonight, Brad. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Brad Treliving, general manager of the Calgary Flames. Are you leaving us now, John?
Are you getting rid of me? No. Are you getting rid of me?
No, you can stay as long as you like.
Okay.
Okay. Is that an answer, Brent?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Let's switch gears a little bit. Shai Davidi joins us from, delightful Dunedin. Today, the last day of real spring training before baseball games begin. What happened today? Anything interesting, Mr. Davidi?
Well, it was the intra-squad game, which was brought a nice little change to the growing monotony. You know, it's a fake baseball game, as Mike Wilner might say. But you know, it was not a bad day. Russ Martin looked all right catching R.A. Dickey. Mitch Ney, Blue Jays prospect, hit a home run. You know, Justin Smoke and Derek Barton made a couple of nice plays at first base, and you know, it's on to the real stuff, or to the real fake stuff now.
No, you know, Mitch Ney's the name. We were talking about this the other day around the cage down there, Shai, that, you know, the Blue Jays have a lot of arms coming, a lot of pitching, you know, starting pitching. That's the most exciting group I've seen in a long, long time, maybe ever with that team. But position players, there's hardly any, right? That where you say this guy is on the verge. Is Mitch Ney, how would you rate him as a prospect?
I think he's an up-and-coming prospect. I don't know that he's an elite prospect yet, but he's one of those guys who can very quickly get into that status with a big year. And he's going to try to increase his power production this year. It's been the one element that's been missing. You know, he doesn't strike out a ton. He walks a little bit. There seems to be a good approach there. But the power numbers for a guy his size, he's 6'3", listed 195, but he looks much thicker than that now. It's probably his draft size or something. That frame should generate a lot more pop. And so he's a guy, if he transitions, he's going to try to do a couple different things, pulling the ball a bit more, tweaking his approach, that if that starts generating a bit more pop, then all of a sudden this guy's going to be a real prospect. He's probably going to be in single-A Dunedin this year, but with the potential to move quickly if he does. And the fact that he's in camp, in the big league camp for the first time, that's a sign that the Blue Jays think that there might be something there with him.
The other guy who's kind of interesting along those lines is Anthony Alford, who you know, has finally given up football, I guess, and is fully committed. A great athlete overall, but you know, kind of one of those questions about whether he's going to be a great baseball player. What's, you know, he is with the big league team in spring training as well. What have you seen anything of Shire, or have you talked to him at all?
I haven't had a chance to chat with him yet. Watched him play a little bit today, and there's just a ton of athleticism. The issue with him is that he's got a ton of catch up to do. And if memory serves, he's got less than 100 at bats in professional baseball over here. He got like 100 something over the winter in Australia. But there are a lot of at bats that he needs to catch up on that he's lost the past few years when he's been playing football. And it's going to be a question of how much the athleticism will allow him to overcome that lost time. And he's a tremendous athlete. He was a quarterback. He transitioned to a free safety. So there's a ton of raw ability, but you know, baseball is such a technical game that, you know, you need the specifics, the little nuances of swings and approaches and all that stuff to have success. And that's where he's got to make up the lost time. So how much the raw ability can compensate and speed the process is a bit of a question. But I think he's really going to be an intriguing guy. And I think he's going to start probably in Lansing or something there, or something around that level. And he's definitely going to be one to watch.
The Sanders injury, we haven't talked to you since the Blue Jays decided to bring Vesiedo in. Is he the logical choice to play left field come the first week of April?
Maybe. And, you know, it's such an interesting roster puzzle right now, Bob. It's just, you've got some sort of period where you're probably going to need someone in center field, but maybe not. And then you've got issues at first base and DH in terms of where are you going to slot in Edwin Encarnacion, and then how are you going to put Deonner Navarro into the mix, and is Deonner Navarro going to be here? And if Navarro isn't here, then all of a sudden things look a lot more open for Justin Smoke and Derek Barton. But if not, then all of a sudden are those guys on the chopping block because you want to find a place for Vicieto. So, and is Vicieto going to be sufficient defensively that you're going to feel comfortable playing with him in the field? Because clearly his best position
is the answer is no.
Yeah, he's a liability no matter where you put him defensively.
Right. I mean, it's remarkable. I was looking at some advanced defensive metrics, and DRS isn't perfect, but it's pretty interesting. And that he's got 72 career innings at first base, and he's a -4 in defensive runs. That means in basically 8 full games, he's given up 4 runs.
Eek.
Which is remarkably awful.
Has he turned up yet, Chuck?
He was supposed to report today, but I did not see him. So it could be that he was just doing his physical and stuff today and that he should be on the field tomorrow.
Because he's one of those guys you kind of want to, you know, like he's not exactly a body beautiful type, you know, and you kind of want to see what kind of shape he's going to show up in. He's, you know, we all know he can hit, or at least he can hit home runs. He strikes out a ton.
Right.
But you know, you kind of wonder what, you know, kind of where he is, you know, physically.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's right-handed. He's a shorter right-handed Juan Francisco, right?
Yep.
And the difference is that he's younger, and that if he gets it, because he does have that pop, then maybe it works. But the thing is that there's so much swing and miss in that game. It was 133 strikeouts and 523 at-bats last year, I believe, or something pretty close to that. I mean, that's a pretty frightening ratio. So I don't know that is necessarily going to change. But if you're just using him in spots and as a guy who can slot in, then maybe that works. But you also have the question, is he going to be happy with that? Because he's here to win a job.
But there was a fair bit. When he first turned up on the scene, there was a fair bit of excitement about him, was there not?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Big. Anyone who hits home runs is going to be excitement, right?
Yeah.
Especially these days, you know that that's a commodity that's becoming increasingly rare. So he could certainly impact the team, but the question is, are you going to be able to live with defense if you can't find him DH at bats? And do you want Edwin Encarnacion, you know, playing first base regularly? I think the preference is to have him at DH so that you can, you know, help him physically stay on the field for the course of the season. So it's a very, very complicated roster puzzle, and to be honest, there is no obvious way that you look at this team and think, you know, that's the way it should be constructed, because you can plug in the different pieces and you can make a pretty rational argument for all the different permutations.
Shai, you said about 5 minutes ago, if Navarro's around, does that mean you have doubt that he is or isn't going to be around?
I think they're just waiting for the opportunity, and at some point it's going to come. At some point someone's going to need a catcher. You know, now is that a team like, say, Arizona or the White Sox or maybe Texas, looking at what they have at the end of the spring, saying, you know what, we should go get this guy because this is an upgrade that we need to have? Or is it until at some point in the season when someone's starting catcher goes down, they don't feel comfortable with their backup and they need some help? And I think at that point the Blue Jays will make that deal. But the challenge is that they need to get some value back for him, because they can have some value for him as a part-time player, but they're trying to do right by him and get him into a starting role. So, you know, there are a lot of pieces that have to fall into place, but my gut is at some point it will happen, because I think really the Blue Jays need it to happen for their roster to be constructed optimally.
Well, and to give them some financial flexibility as well.
I'm not buying any of this. I'm sorry. He's my backup catcher and my part-time DH. Period. End of story. The options. Who's the option for the Blue Jays as the number two catcher? Toley?
Yeah, which isn't great, but
you're telling me.
Yeah, but here's the counter argument I'll make to about that, Bob. I think it's great that Martin knows how to catch Dickey and that he should, on occasion, be able to catch him. But catching Dickey wears guys out. And I think, you know, in talking to Russell a little bit, you know, it's tiring because the focus that you need, and I've talked to Toley about this too, is that it's a draining experience because you have to lock in on that pitch for, you know, 100 times or more in a game. And, you know, it's pulling your arm one way, it's pulling your body the other way. You're not sure where it's going. the mental toll is intense too. Martin's going to play 120 games anyways. Do you want to put this additional toll on him too and just wear him out even more than he's already going to get worn down? So, I mean, I think optimally you have Toley there to catch Dickey 20 times and then Martin catches him 10 or 15 times or something like that. And physically Martin ends up stronger. Now, is it better, you know, if Martin goes down that Navarro's there? Absolutely. There's no debate about that. But if you can use Navarro to get either a piece for your farm system or, you know, a reliever right now, and then, you know, have Toley around to be able to help Martin be physically stronger over the course of the season, doesn't that make more sense?
No, because I don't want to play with a 24-man roster again. They give you 25 guys. You better have 25 guys that can contribute. And I know you can say, well, the 25th guy doesn't play that much. He's not that important. What difference does it really make? Well, it does make a difference. It makes a difference pinch hitting. It makes a difference in terms of your ability to use a guy on other days. It's not just going to be R.A. Dickey. I think if you have another catcher, then I'm okay with it. But in the absence of another catcher, and I don't think Toley is that guy, I want Navarro here. Plus, I understand you want to give Encarnacion rest, but until somebody takes first base away from him, I need a DH, and Navarro is the best candidate to be the DH. So I think you can give Navarro 400, 450 at-bats a year, either backing up Martin or DHing. And I got no issue with it because the one thing we know about Deonor Navarro is he can hit a bit.
Shai, I didn't get a chance to talk to Eddie about this before I left, but you know, there was a lot of people were assuming at the beginning of this camp that he just wanted to DH. He didn't want to play first anymore. Then Gibby showed up and said, nope, Edwin's going to play first base or play a lot of first base. Has Edwin spoken yet about his preference?
He's maintaining the same thing that he's whatever the team wants him to do, he's happy to do, that he's ready to play first base. And he did actually lose a little bit of weight. He looks mm-hmm. a little bit slimmer. I mean, he's still a big guy, has a big frame, but he's quite a bit, I don't know, quite a bit, but he's noticeably slimmer this year. So I think the fact that he's got a little bit less weight on him, you know, he thinks that's going to help him stay on the field over the course of the year. And maybe he does. He thinks that if he's in the 225 to 230 range, which is where he's at right now, that's the optimal weight for him to be carrying to avoid injury. So, you know, the thinking, though, is that for a guy who's had back problems in each of the last 3 years and other ailments on the turf, that the more DH at-bats you can get him, the better. And he's often said that, you know, when he's a DH, he ends up spending more time in the video room
mm-hmm.
and between at-bats, and then he's able to, you know, do a bit more work that way and trying to figure out what sequence the pitchers might be using against him. So, you know, there are some advantages. And, you know, Bob, I agree with everything you said before, and I just think this Edwin just fits into that. There's just so many combinations. And you know, you made so many good points, but the other factor is that, you know, if you can get Edwin Encarnacion at DH, and if you can get Russ Martin to not have to catch Dickey 30 times, you know, maybe you're sacrificing on some parts of your roster, but then you're gaining by making your superstar guys, putting them in the best position possible to be superstars, and maybe that's a gain. So there's just so many different combinations right now. I think some of it will get sorted over the next 4.5 weeks when they start playing these exhibition games. But I think there are going to be a lot of coin flip decisions for them to make in terms of which.
Well, that's for sure. Look, the one thing we know for certain is neither you nor I are making these decisions. So we at the end of it, we just have to wait and see what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, it'll be fine by me.
No, I'll definitely defer to Bob there.
26 before the hour. Thanks, Davidi. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
That is Shai Davidi at spring training. We'll take the break. When we come back, Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Quick visit. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, More of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Seventeen before the hour. Now, usually we allot plenty of time for our friend Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, but today we been carried away with
because it's trade deadline day. It just swamps everything. I'm sure Bob was
exciting stuff.
Bob was paying attention to it down there.
He didn't. He didn't even look up. Here's Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. So
not
name me.
True. We made a couple of deals and now own Brett Connolly and Max Talbot. That much I do know.
All right.
And that and of course the big thing down here. As much as, of course, franchise tag day in the NFL. And
yes.
Patriots got arched an eyebrow or two by franchise tagging kicker Steven Gostkowski rather than safety Devin McCourty.
Mm. And why do you suppose that decision was made?
Very interesting. I guess I don't know. If the McCourty thing ties in with the need to re-sign Revis or they figure out a way they can, I don't know, really. I mean, Gostkowski, yes, he's a wonderful kicker.
But
he had, I think he was 35 for 37 last year. He's a top-flight kicker, and certainly that he has value. But I'm surprised. I don't have the answer. I would be anxious to see what the experts are saying about this tomorrow because I think we all, so many of us anticipated that it would be McCourty.
All right, let's get to the functional story we wanted to talk about. A ragtag professional golfer spent a year on the PGA Tour, also has been given lessons, has spent time caddying, goes on the radio, says Tiger Woods suspended for a month by the PGA Tour for drug use. Everybody, of course, denies it, including the guy who made the statement, ultimately.
Yeah, he's just sort of backpedaling really fast because he's got threat.
Fast as he can.
The deal with Tiger... He had an association with Dr. Galea, the famous Dr. Galea. Therefore, we have every right to arch an eyebrow there and say, can we be naive to think that it's not inconceivable that Tiger did something naughty with regard to performance-enhancing drugs? But if he did do something naughty, a one-month suspension isn't even a slap on the wrist. That's like flipping, the spinning, not spinning, but, just boinging the rubber band on somebody's wrist. I mean,
agreed.
So I don't know.
Yeah,
this guy has already retracted it. I truly don't know what to make of it. But if something had ever surfaced ever at some point in time that did tie him to PEDs, I don't think a lot of us would be surprised.
But let me play conspiracy theorist here because I kind of like this one because it is sort of, it's reminiscent of the secret Michael Jordan suspension that turned into him playing baseball, of course, right? Go away for a year, play baseball, and then come back because...
Oh, yeah, well, that's when I'm on board with...
You're on board with that one? Okay, well, here's the... So, if you're the PGA, you don't want Tiger Woods to go away for any length of time, and he's not going to play baseball. Right, you only want him to go away for a little while. If you, if you were upset about him doing PEDs, you definitely.
Isn't that so phony, though? That who would a month if he really did something that involved PEDs?
Well, I don't know what. Well, let's put it this way:
he might not have played in the next 4 weeks anyway. In fact,
I
doubt he would play in the next four
but
weeks.
But Bob, let me ask you this:
that just doesn't make any sense, and the source is dubious to say the least.
I'm with you on that, but if you were the PGA. And you don't have a collectively negotiated, you don't have a testing program the way that other sports do, where there, there's a process, and so you don't. There would be no reason necessarily for this information to ever become public. And you did find out that Tiger Woods was using PEDs, maybe with the help of our Toronto homeboy, Dr. Galea. He's one of ours.
I was not going to mention.
Well, it's okay. We'll take him. What would you do? If you're the PGA,
he's the franchise. But what a joke if they do it now. I mean, when's he saying now? When we know he can't play anyway. This is like Syracuse turning themselves in on the year when they're not going to make the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't. It's just to me, it's so transparent. And in the old sense, that's another thing. That word has been flipped around. It used to mean that you saw through everything and it was a bad thing. Now transparency is a good thing. That's another story. We'll go into that. But it's so phony. I don't know. It just doesn't wash. But yes, you don't want. But the value of Tiger to the tour is another interesting topic. I mean, aren't people getting more and more used to the idea that he's no longer a viable part of the tour?
I guess so. I'm not sure they're happy about it, but they may. They have to. They've been kind of forced to get used to it.
They got to move on. But I hate this, the whole drug topic is just so annoying. It is. It truly is. It's ruined Hall of Fame voting. And it's just annoying.
But it's interesting that all three of us, I'm assuming you would agree with this, Bob, all three of us are quite willing to consider the possibility that he used.
Yes, we are. And I did at first, way back in the beginning, I didn't. But, you know, I'm sorry, but the Dr. Galea connection is disturbing. It is, and it's not easy to explain away.
Well, no, and I think that is the that's the chip that can't be pushed off the table here. I mean, you can look at his body type and you can say, well, maybe he was lifting weights and maybe he, he wouldn't be the first guy, I don't think, to change his body type as dramatically as he did.
No, and you wanted to believe it was the result of assiduous, training and weightlifting and all, and he was different than everybody else.
Yeah.
He was his age for for a long time until people finally started hitting the ball as long as he did. But it's just like Lance Armstrong. He was associated with that dirty Italian doctor, and that was always hanging out there before, the world finally did, collapse on him.
The Cleveland Browns will have a quarterback with McCown on the back of his jersey. This can't be a bad thing, can it? Although it's Josh, and he was 1-10 last year as a starter with Tampa Bay.
I would not be, thinking playoffs just because of his presence on the roster. Let me just put it that way. That franchise is really the popular word is dysfunctional to apply to them, but it is a mess. To be sure, and that franchise. But whoever the quarterback's going to be, I don't think he's going to transform them, Mr. McCown, no.
Johnny Manziel is still there for the moment.
He sure is.
Would he be your...
The knee-jerk public support. We don't know what they truly think, if they wish they had never even, never uttered that word that night, that fateful night,
right.
Or not. More than likely, they probably wish the problem would go away, but they're supporting him publicly. And I don't wish any ill will on him. If he really does have a problem and he really wants to help himself, then fine. If he's finally come to the time, ready to grow up and accept that responsibility, it's fine. But he is a quarterback that they it's still on their roster. Yes, that is true.
If you were making the decision in 1 minute, mm-hmm. Is he your starting quarterback? Is he on your roster, or are you drafting?
In the absence of a great alternative, Hoyer is a free agent, right?
That's right.
Let him compete. If you still, whatever qualities you saw, you did take him in the first round. Somebody in there thought that he could play. And he has admitted that he didn't fly himself fully to the task last year. Let us suppose he gets religion. Let's suppose he absolutely positively comes back as a reformed person and
right.
really wants to make the most of his God-given football ability. Then I would say let him compete. I have no problem with that.
Mr. Ryan, we'll talk to you in a few weeks. Good health.
Yes. And, thanks a lot. Appreciate that. Bye-bye.
And we'll talk to you soon. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Well, there you go.
Another trade deadline day is over, Bob. Another one passes.
And
turns for one more year.
And you've made it through.
That's right. Only 365 more sleeps till the next one.
Obviously, you had no confidence in the significance of this trade deadline because you didn't do a damn thing for it.
You're right. No, I was involved in other projects.
You?
No.
Oh, they didn't?
No, I was involved in other things. They knew I was.
Had
very,
you made it clear busy. Previously that you had no interest in this?
No, it was not a discussion. I've always gone wherever, I've been dragged into it by you a few times, but that's it.
You haven't been dragged in by me. I've been dragged in.
And then I was had to follow.
Well, you didn't have to.
I'm not an insider.
Didn't you have a good time?
I'm an outsider. There's all those insiders down there. They got thousands of them.
You're telling me. Our thanks to a whole bunch of people who joined us tonight. Mark Bergevin, Brad Treliving, Shai Davidi, and Bob Ryan. Our thanks to John Shannon, who you may have noticed, and I didn't make mention of it, slid out the back door because now the festivities and the partying will begin down at the CBC. For Stephen Brunt, Bob McCown, have a nice evening. See you tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.